Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. This is Trucking with Authority. For the next hour, consider this the show to help you on your trip to a better trucking business. Consider me the navigator on that journey. I'm your host, Kenny Long, and I'm here to take your calls, answer your questions, and do the best I can to help you learn the ins and outs of becoming a motor carrier. We can talk about anything from getting started in the business as a company driver all the way out through pulling your own freight under your own MC numbers. We can talk about dealing with the FMCSA, working with brokers, finding freight with direct customers, load boards, sales, negotiations, some tactics and principles. We can talk about factoring, maybe some quick pay options, and anything else that comes to your mind that has to do with anything related to the trucking business. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been on the show. There's been a lot going on. This is the fourth quarter, and I can tell things are already starting to change, and the freight is moving a little differently than it has all year. The rates aren't really picking up just yet. It's not been a typical year with anything. In fact, I was just looking at some of the statistics, and if you figure in the fourth quarter of 2015, it has been about 8 quarters in a row that have not really followed any standard trends. Closest we had was third quarter of 2014. Although rates were great after the 4th of July, it was a very typical bit of a slump. But rates still stayed above where they're at right now, all of 2014. But overall, 2014 was completely, it was knocked it out of the park. The rates were phenomenal. The load-to-truck ratios were out of this world. We had set records in every category. It was phenomenal. 2015 was a complete opposite. And I've been reading a lot of articles today, and it's actually kind of funny if you go back and look at some of the articles that were written in early 2014 and to watch how the attitudes of everybody from shippers to carriers to brokers to receivers to drivers, everybody in the freight chain, how their attitude changed throughout the year. And then this year, things turned. And I don't think anybody was ready for it. Now, one of the things that I think happened was people got spoiled in 2014. In fact, I'm sure of it. A lot of people went out and got their own authority, which was what started this show to begin with. There were a lot of questions about how to get started, what to do, how to find freight, how do I cash in on this? Well, last year it was easy to cash in on this. This year, it takes a little more work, and I think a lot of people have been blindsided by that. Although 2015 is slower than 2014, I have a lot of data that shows that 2015 is right on par with 2013. 2013 rates were right about where we're at right now. Actually, I'm sure there are some out there screaming at your radios and phones right now saying, no, they weren't. They were even higher in 2013 than they are now. Actually, let me tell you that no, fuel was almost $4 a gallon. We were $3.80 to $4 a gallon, depending on where you were across the country. We're $1.50 to $2 a gallon less than that right now. And the rates reflect it almost perfectly. In fact, adjusted for fuel, our overall average rates are down only a few pennies from what they were just last year. It's a little bit scary, though, because there are a lot more trucks out here, but freight is actually up. Freight spending is up from last year. It's just spread out a lot thinner. Overall, there's not as many shipments going out per truckload or per truck. The load-to-truck ratios that we always talk about are just not there. Still are. Now, if you're working on the spot market, what I just said doesn't make any sense because you are not seeing that the trend that I'm explaining right now. But that's because last year, shippers got hosed. They were raked over the coals in a big way because of the rates on the spot market. And they prepared themselves in 2015 by signing more contracts, working with more direct shippers and direct carriers, and not using as much on the spot market. So overall, there's actually a little bit more freight, not a lot. And I will say that there should be more. If you look at some other numbers, such as the gross domestic product, growth of the country, inflation rates, things like that, we should actually be seeing more freight than there is. But it's still on par with where we were at last year. Freight rates, even on the spot market, are only off a few pennies. So, that being said, a lot of stuff has happened in the past couple of weeks. We had our motor carrier meetup, our last show. It was a couple of weeks ago now. I mentioned it. That was why I missed 2 weeks ago, and I was recovering last week. It was a crazy week. We had a lot of motor carriers, some that were just in the business a couple of years, some that have been in for decades, some that have been in for years and years but have never worked with more than just one or two customers. Some have never worked with brokers at all, which is a shock to many of you listening now. Some have never worked with brokers at all, and they don't even know how. We had one there that owns a fleet and has never driven a truck before. Of course, you have the one truck owner operators, and you have the small fleets. So we had a whole gamut of different people out there. All of us are experiencing the same market trends right now. Slower spot market. Some that have never worked on a spot market, so they didn't know what we were talking about. They're still seeing great rates. They're still doing well with their customers. They're comfortable. They're happy. But we got to share a lot of information about load boards and negotiations. I put on a presentation myself about negotiation. It was more of a moderated discussion, you might say. It was open forum, like I'd like this call tonight to be. If you have any questions or comments tonight, press 1 on your keypad. That will get you in the queue. Elizabeth is screening your calls, put you on the list. We've already got plenty of callers on the air already, or on the line already, and some are already raising their hands to get on. And we will get to the calls here in just a few minutes. Some of the interesting things that came out of the motor carrier meetup was some discussions that I had. And, of course, one of the biggest questions on everybody's mind, and I've talked about it a couple of times on this show, and I'll go ahead and make the announcement. The URS, FMCSA, as I've mentioned before, is changing the entire registration system, the Unified Registration System. This is different than the UCR, Unified Carrier Registration. This is different programs. The UCR, which is administered by the state of Indiana, will remain the same, but the URS by the FMCSA is replacing the way that you register for a DOT number and an MC number, or what will no longer be an MC number, just consider it your authority, tied to your DOT number. And they're delaying it all, which is probably a good thing. I've already got a call on that right now. Let me go ahead and jump to Tim in Oregon. Tim, are you with us?
Hey, I'm with you. How you doing, Kenny?
Fantastic. How can we help you tonight?
Well, you were just speaking about the very question I had. I've been listening to you off and on for the last couple of years. I've been working on getting my own authority. I've been getting my equipment put together, and I'm almost there. And so just getting ready to register, and I had heard you talk about, you know, this very subject, you know, that you were only going to have to, just register for your DOT. And that was the question I had, is has that started yet, or when is it going to start, or what's the deal on that?
Okay, well, it has been delayed, as we figured it would, but they waited until last minute to tell us. It was supposed to start October 23rd. They waited until the second week of October to even make an announcement that it would be delayed. So nobody knew what to do. Nobody knew what the system was going to be like. FMCSA never hinted what the system would be like. They told us the form number, and that was about it. The way it will work, and just to summarize the entire program real quick, the new system is doing away with MC numbers completely. And that was the basis of your question.
Right.
Starting December 12th of this year, December 12th is the new date, for new entrants only. That's it. New entrants only. December 12th of 2015. They delayed it a little over a month.
Okay.
So December 12th, 2015, new entrants will start using the new URS registration system, the new portal with FMCSA. It's the only way you will be able to register. It has to be done online, but it's done through the website, and I'm sure there will be companies cashing in because the old system was confusing enough for some folks, and with a whole new system, I'm sure it will add a whole new level of confusion, and I'm sure the little scam companies that are out there to fill out these forms for you are already counting their dollar bills, but December 12th, for new entrants only, you will use the new system. Now, I suspect they have not released how this new system will work. They have not released anything other than to say the fee schedule, the new fees, which is something they never mentioned before. We all suspected there would be new fees associated with this, but they never actually put in writing about new fees. However, they did announce the new fees. The new fee schedule will start with the next phase of this, which will be September 30th, 2016, so 9 months out from now. Well, about, I guess, 11 months out from now. So,
right.
So you, as a new entrant, if you start now, today, you'll still be using the old system. You'll still fill out the MCS-150. You'll get your USDOT number, as always, and that's free. You will also fill out the OP1 form, which gets you your operating authority, which is your MC number, which currently you will still get an MC number. That will be $300.
Okay.
That is still the system. The fees are still supposed to be the same. What they have not yet explained is, when does that MC number go away? Existing carriers, since I'm on the topic, I'm going to cover it all. Existing carriers that already have a DOT number, already have an MC number in your authority, and everything is still active, nothing changes until the next phase at September 30th, 2016. Now, with the government, the fiscal year is October 1st to September 30th. So what this tells me is they're starting this new system at the fiscal year, and they're also announcing that the new fees will start when that system goes online, which means they're bringing on the new fee schedule, the new payment system, at the same time as the new fiscal year, which in a way makes sense, but it's the government, so they probably didn't plan it that way.
Right.
So I've been telling everybody to get ahead of it, but right now you've got at least until December 12th to go ahead and register.
Okay. Any advantage to waiting? Because I'm actually not putting my truck on until the 1st of March is when I'm going to work for the carrier I'm going to work for. Would it be detrimental to wait or just go ahead and do it now?
That's going to be a coin toss. And the problem is they have not announced anything. Again, they announced dates. They didn't tell us how the system will work. And that's a problem for everybody. That was the problem before. They didn't give us any information. They told us that there would be some type of a phase-in program. I think September 30th, they pushed it off over a year. To me, I knew it wasn't ready, but wow, that's their way off. So December 12th, I expect there will still be a lot of bugs. By March, they should have most of that worked out, I would hope. But I think that they're using this phase-in program. I'm thinking that their date to get all the bugs worked out of phase one is September 30th, 2016.
Right.
Otherwise, they would have phased it in a little faster than that. That's my thoughts on it. So if you're looking at March, I think it's probably a coin toss. I would be inclined to hold off. And the fee schedule is one of the big things that was a big question mark before. We didn't know how they would charge. They didn't know anything different. It sounds like nothing will change with the cost associated until September 30th. So that being said, I think it's worthwhile to just hold off and wait, because you never know what will happen between now and then with your own business or with the freight market, the way it's been and the way business is. So I would probably hold off and wait on that.
Well, that's kind of one of the reasons I was going to get started the 1st of November here, but because the market is soft and the carrier that I'm going to go to work for, you know, they would put me to work, but would not guarantee that I would always have a load. And they said if I waited till after the first of the year and right into the spring that it would be better, which for me it's not a big deal because I run Hotshot anyway and I'm always busy doing this. So.
Well, I will say that I fully expect the way the market has been somewhat soft this year. Traditionally, now anything can happen. It could be bad weather and throw off the entire market. I think last year in 2014, spot market was so high that a lot of shippers pushed to get more contracts out there to try to pad themselves against the huge spikes in the rates. And this year, I know of a few carriers that are getting paid to have trucks sit because they have contracted routes. They're supposed to run a certain number of routes every week, and the shipper doesn't have the freight to move, so they're paying the truck to sit. So now they're getting hit on the backside. They're trying to protect themselves, and they're taking it from the other end. So things might turn around next year. And usually in the beginning of the year, again, government contracts, a lot of the big stuff started October. And then, of course, the first quarter, January, a lot of the RFPs for some of the big shippers, the requests for proposals, come out again in January. And then the next round of those will be in the spring. So it's the first quarter to be soft as usual, if not softer than most people can handle.
Right.
But,
again, for me,
there's no way to predict it right now.
Yeah, for me, it's not a big worry. Like I said, I have my Hotshot business, which keeps me plenty busy, but the carrier I work for has been prompting me to go into, you know, the Class 8, which I don't have a problem doing, and I own the equipment, so it's not a big deal. I'm set for it. So, but I appreciate all your help. Thanks, Kenny, and I'll be talking to you along the ways here the next few months.
I look forward to it, and good luck to you.
Thanks
for the call, Tim. If you have any other questions or comments, tonight is an open forum. I'm here for you and for your questions tonight. I have a lot of off-the-air questions that I'll cover, but I'd love to get you all on the air while I've got the call going. So go ahead and press number one, and we will get you on. So the UCR system, URS, excuse me, even I'm confused. The URS system has been delayed. I'm glad I got that out there. And I don't think anybody has anything major to worry about just yet. I do expect December 12th, when the new entrants start using it, there will be a lot of bugs to be worked out. Hopefully by September 30th, phase one will have the bugs worked out, but that's just the application process. Everything else starts on September 30th, so I think there's hundreds of people apply to get their authority every week. Thousands deal with the system every week on other business. So September 30th, the traffic on that site is going to increase exponentially in 2016. So I'm assuming that they're using this as a phase-in to get the bugs worked out of the majority of the system. But then you add in the new fee structure, And wow, it's anybody's guess how that will work. So one of the other things that came up this week, which I thought was really interesting, I talked a lot, like I said, I put on a presentation about negotiations, about some tactics and principles. One of the things that I made a part of my presentation was there's a lot of talk about the principles of negotiation, the concepts, and that is win-win negotiation and, you know, do the right thing and psychology and trying to win them over. But what they don't talk a lot about are tactics. And that's the nitty-gritty and the haggling and the how to get the number that you need. And there's a lot more that needs to be said about that. And I won't go into that right now. I will cover that on another show. But I want to throw out a book. It's called, and now I lost my book. But there's four books that I think are very important when you're getting into doing any types of negotiations at all. The first one, and I recommend this for anybody dealing with anybody, and I'm talking about kindergartners. This might be a little advanced for the kindergarten level, but high school, definitely. I've got a teenage 19-year-old brother that I'm going to try to get him to read this, and it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People. Probably one of the most popular books of all time, written in the 1930s. Every word of it still applies today, written by Dale Carnegie. Two other books that are more specific to just the negotiation part and deal a lot with just the principles and concepts are Getting to Yes by William Ury and Getting Past No. Those two books work hand in hand, both by William Ury, and they have a lot of the concepts about win-win negotiation and how to get there. But the one book that I really wanted to tell everybody about that I found to be very valuable, and it talks about the nitty-gritty tactics, the front line, how to handle it. Now, this is after you started talking about the numbers and you're really trying to get the number you need, and that is Negotiate to Win by Jim Thomas, The 21 Rules for Successful Negotiating. I found this book to be phenomenal for the frontline negotiator, especially in our industry, because there's a lot of tactics and techniques in there that you can use to really get the numbers that you need. Even in the soft market right now, there's not a lot of negotiation room on the spot market, but there's still some. And using some of these techniques and this tactics in this book can really help you get there. And one of the things that we came across at the Motor Carrier Meetup 2 weekends ago was some people still are too shy to negotiate at all. Some people find it to be difficult or embarrassing. And that's a common American trait. Other countries around the world negotiate on everything. Americans don't do that. And because of that, Americans are probably the weakest negotiators in the world. Now, this book can tell you some of the ways that you can turn that around in your favor. And so, again, I plan on doing another negotiation show here real quick, probably in the next week or two. But Negotiate to Win by Jim Thomas, phenomenal book. One of the other things that came up, and this was kind of a spin-off from our little meetup. We had a lot of... And we do have a lot of questions popping up now. Let me remind everyone again, if you have any questions or comments, I will try to get to every call tonight. I'm going to let a few more get on the line before I jump to the phones. We already have a few piling up here. I have one other thing I want to cover before we start getting to questions again. But go ahead and press 1. I will get to you. If you have any questions or comments, I will get to everyone tonight, and we will get you on the air. So, fuel surcharge is another one that came up that I know there's a lot of confusion about it. And something that was really amazing to me, and it's something that I thought about a lot on my own in the past, because there's so much confusion about it, how can you use it to your advantage? Now, we all know as truck drivers how to use it to our advantage based on what a carrier gives an owner-operator. But what we're, one of the reasons this came up in a unique way was when you are the carrier, especially if you have owner-operators or maybe you're negotiating that fuel surcharge with the shipper, that dynamic and how that works changes. Fuel surcharge is not supposed to be, not really intended. Now, there's no laws, there's no, you know, written rules on how a fuel surcharge has to work. But the idea, the concept, and the intention of a fuel surcharge is so that you always make the exact same amount of money on a run, no matter what the price of fuel is at the pump. Now, when you start listening to folks like Kevin Rutherford, which, and this is great advice, don't get me wrong, you can make money on the fuel surcharge when you're leased to a carrier. And let me tell you why. And most of you already know, but let me give you a brief summary here. Fuel surcharge typically is based on Department of Energy report on the average price of diesel fuel across the country. Assuming that the truck gets 6 miles to the gallon, the carrier will set a price, and that number can be any number. You can throw a dart at a dartboard and pick a number. Most of the time, it's between $1.10 and $1.25. I've seen it as low as $1 with some carriers, but usually it's in that range, $1 to $1.25. Pick any number. Whatever that number is, that is all that you will pay for fuel ever, as long as you're on this fuel surcharge contract. That's the only price, as long as you, your truck gets exactly 6 miles to the gallon, which is exactly how the formula is spelled out. Now, the way that people make money on that is if your truck gets more than 6 miles to the gallon, you can make money on the fuel that you buy because you're burning as much as you're getting paid for. So you're making money on the fuel surcharge. Most people understand that part of the concept. Let me take this to where I found it to be a fantastic sales tool, something that was, I've considered doing something like this, but I talked to somebody this week that had success with it. First of all, there's two angles to this. First, the first angle is typically fuel surcharge is based at 6 miles to the gallon. That's how it's been for years and years and years. 6 miles to the gallon, pick your number. Becoming a little more common to see carriers such as the big fleet, such as Mesilla Valley, who spends a lot of time on their fuel mileage program. You can tell looking at their trucks. They've got the trailer tails and the skirts and aerodynamics and wheel covers and all the little gadgets and gizmos to get fuel economy, and they've got them across the fleet. Now, owner-operators, that's one thing, but when you see them across the fleet, you know a fleet is putting a lot of money and research into getting better fuel economy. And some of the others, such as Prime and some other companies, are starting to get fleet averages that are exceeding 8 miles to the gallon. So if you own the fleet, now look at this from the carrier point of view. If you own the fleet that was getting 8 miles to the gallon or better, why would you pay your owner-operators? With keep in mind, the intention of a fuel surcharge is so the owner-operators only will never lose money if fuel prices go up. They will make the exact same amount of money when fuel prices change. So that in mind, if your fleet is getting 8 miles to the gallon, why would not you base your fuel surcharge formula at that 8 miles to the gallon? So, a lot of carriers are beginning to phase that in. While most of them today are at 6 miles to the gallon, the fuel surcharge, I'm starting to see some that are putting 7 miles to the gallon in there. Now, let me tell you the difference real quick. I looked up the national average diesel fuel price this week. It's $2.48 per gallon. That's not including any discounts. That is including IFTA. That's off-the-pump retail prices. $2.48 a gallon average nationwide. Some carriers might break it down regionally, but it's just a nationwide average. Now, if we set our price at $1.25, if you had a truck getting 6 miles to the gallon and we set our fuel surcharge at 6 miles to the gallon, you would never, no matter what the price of fuel is, you would never pay more than $1.25 for fuel. At that rate, the per mile rate is 0.205, 20 and a half cents per mile fuel surcharge. And most will round up or down, most round down. So 20 cents per mile fuel surcharge today at $1.25 pump price. Now, if your carrier sets that at a dollar, it'll be more. But here's the other thing. Let's say that you have 7 miles to the gallon and you set your price at 7 miles to the gallon, $1.25, $2.48 per gallon, but you average it at 7 miles to the gallon, your fuel surcharge would only be a 17 and a half cents. So you're looking at a 3 cent difference there. At 1 mile per gallon, that's 3 cents per mile different. Now, there are a few listeners that are bumping and averaging even 10 miles to the gallon. At 10 miles to the gallon, the fuel surcharge would only be 12.3 cents, rounded down 12 cents per gallon. A little over 8 cents per gallon different than 8 cents per mile. Let me keep my terminology straight. That would be 8 cents per mile different than a truck getting 6 miles to the gallon. Now, if you're leased to a carrier, of course you want to take advantage of that 6 miles to the gallon. But now, let's talk about, as a carrier's point of view, trying to make the sale. You're trying to get your foot in the door with a long-term shipper on a long-term contract. If you went in and negotiated at a 6 mile per gallon fuel surcharge rate, you're asking for your base rate plus 20 and a half cents per mile. Now, let's say you can confidently do it at 7 miles to the gallon. You can go in and negotiate for 17 and a half cents per mile. Now, think to yourself, if you are in competition with that's asking for a fuel surcharge of 7 miles to the gallon versus 6, who do you think will win that contract with the shipper? Let's say you're bidding on a 1,000-mile run, 1,000 miles. The fuel surcharge, and just to use easy numbers, and I'm not saying anybody should do this, but let's say your number is $1,000. Okay, we'll do $2 a mile. $2,000 plus fuel surcharge. You need, at 6 miles a gallon, you need $205 fuel surcharge. However, at 7 miles to the gallon, on that same 1,000-mile run, you only need $175 fuel surcharge. Now, that's a $30 difference on that one run. Now, if you are the shipper, what number are you looking at harder? Now, that's the difference between 6 and 7 miles to the gallon. Now, I guarantee, I know there are people out there screaming at your phones and radios saying, I put all of this money into getting this great fuel economy. I am damn sure going to get the money out of it by getting that fuel surcharge. Absolutely you are. But guess what? That money might come out of winning that contract versus not winning that contract. If you can get that contract because you can bid a 1,000-mile run at $30 less than the next guy, if that's what closes the deal, you damn well better take it and be happy that you get the better fuel economy in your truck. That's what got you the deal. Now, you're making the same amount of money at $30 less. You're making the same money as the guy that's got a 6-mile-to-gallon truck. So you should be happy with that number. And that's what fuel surcharge is all about. So that's one way to look at it. Now, that's pretty elementary right there. But discussions that I had this week took it quite a bit further. One of those was, instead of setting my base price at $1.25 or $1 to $1.25, just picking one of those arbitrary numbers, which is exactly what it is. It's an arbitrary number. It means nothing. Why not set your price at zero. And I have seen some carriers do this, that lease on owner-operators, and owner-operators love it because they don't think they're buying fuel, but of course they are. Of course they pay for fuel. But their fuel surcharge, set price at zero. That is the arbitrary number, zero. So, now you go to your customer, and you are competing with a person that is getting the $1.25 set price. They go in and they want a $2,000 contract plus fuel surcharge. Automatically, there's a psychological trick, and I talked about this in my negotiations class last weekend. Everything in negotiation is psychological. Everything. Everything in communication is psychological. If you go in and say, I need this plus more, automatically there's a calculation going on in their head. I need this plus a fuel surcharge. You set your price at zero, and you go in and say, I just need this rate. So you set your price at zero, and today's price and to go back to this, you would be asking for $2,400, $2,413 to be exact, plus fuel surcharge, which you say, I set it at zero. So your fuel surcharge still fluctuates the same amount. At the end of the day, and I think I have my numbers backwards, you're going to ask for $1,600 plus fuel surcharge. Again, it's a psychological trick. So you can go in and say, I need $2,000 plus fuel surcharge. Or the next guy will come in and say, I need $1,600 plus fuel surcharge. The fuel surcharge at zero right now is $413. And that's where I got my math backwards. So at $2.48 per gallon retail, and the fuel surcharge at $0 at 6 miles to the gallon is $413 on a 1,000-mile run. 7 miles to the gallon. Now remember, the bigger this gap is, and using the same logic as before, the cheaper number will always win. At 7 miles to the gallon, that same fuel surcharge is $354. So that gap grows because you've decreased your set price. So now instead of a $30 gap between 6 and 7 miles to the gallon, your gap is actually $59. Now, you go into your, and mind you, whatever price you set today will be identical. So you go in and say, today I need $2,000 plus fuel surcharge would be $2,205. So to use the same numbers, set price of zero at 6 miles to the gallon, you go in and you could tell your customer, I need $1,792. Automatically, $208 less, $208 less than the other guy, plus fuel surcharge. That's at 6 miles to the gallon. At 7 miles to the gallon, you could go in and, whoops. So at 7 miles to the gallon, you can go in and say that you'll do the same run at the same rate for $59, what would appear on paper to be $59 less. So, and I don't have all my math. I should have worked all these calculations out beforehand, but I've got my scratch pad here. Anyway, so what I'm getting at is you can use this fuel surcharge to your advantage in negotiation. The number is the same, and over time, they all work the same. But remember, negotiations has a lot of psychological tricks to it. So So who would you sell to? The guy that comes in and says, I can do this run for $1,800 plus fuel surcharge, or the guy that comes in and says, I can do it for $2,000 plus fuel surcharge? Now, granted, if you're smart, you'll go ahead and you'll plug the numbers in. You'll find out at the end of the day, they're both the exact same number today. But it looks a little easier to sell. So that's one of the tricks. Now, I said that to say this. I'm going to go with one more thing here. What happens if you set your fuel surcharge at $3 a gallon or even $4? Today, fuel price is $2.48 per gallon. You set your fuel surcharge formula at $3 per gallon. Guess what? You are now giving your shipper a fuel surcharge discount. You, as the carrier, are paying out fuel surcharge money. Some of you are probably screaming at me right now. You are paying a fuel surcharge because you've set that price higher than the actual price. But how does that look in negotiations? 1,000-mile trip at $2 a mile is $2,000 plus fuel surcharge. At 6 miles to the gallon, if you went in and told your customer, $2,086 is my flat rate, but I will give you back $86. I will give you a fuel surcharge. I will give you a fuel surcharge discount. You let me pull the rate, your freight. I will base my discount or my rate at $3 per gallon. Now remember, no matter where you set this rate, and I'm really sorry that my math got messed up here. I have a nice, neat spreadsheet, and I messed up somewhere, but I think I'm making my point. By setting the price higher, you can actually show the customer that you're giving them a discount on the lower price of fuel. Right now, that's what shippers are looking for. Shippers are screaming, fuel prices are down. Freight rates should be down. Set your fuel surcharge at $3, $4, $5 a gallon, whatever you want it to be. It doesn't matter. The number is arbitrary. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, every formula comes out with the exact same number. But you can use it as a selling point because it just sounds better. It's a psychological trick. I know somebody this week that sealed a deal doing just that. They set their price at a little over $3 per gallon, and they are giving a discount to the shipper to move their freight. Go ahead and press 1 if you have any questions or comments. I'm sure there's a lot of comments about that. We're going to get to the calls. We have some calls on the line. Lamont in Georgia. Welcome to the program. How can we help you? Uh-oh. Lamont, we have dropped Lamont in Georgia. I may have been a little stage fright. And it looks like we've dropped a few calls. Maybe we have some phone issues. Let's try to get him on the line again. If you're on the line, if you have any questions or comments, go ahead and press 1. I will get you on the air. Lamont in Georgia wanted to know how to solicit shippers. Wow, I could do another show on that. I have done an entire show on that. Let's go over some cliff notes. First thing is find the shipper that you want to solicit. Not one, not two, but hundreds that you want to go after. Expect to hear no a lot. But don't let that bother you. Don't be afraid to hear no. Get out there. Having some phone issues here. Get out there and make the call. Call them on the phone. Go in person. Find the decision maker. That's who you need to target. Shoot high. Shoot for the president of the company if you have to, and hope that you hit the traffic manager or higher. Somebody that makes the decision on who to ship the freight. You need to get through any gatekeepers, which is going to be the secretary or the shipping clerk that's on the dock or whoever it is that is not a decision maker, but is just tough enough to not let you get to the decision maker. Some ways to do that are send some emails and carbon copy the decision maker in, make some good comments to the gatekeeper, tell them how great of a job they're doing, tell them you love to work with them, and chances are they will forward that to their boss because everybody likes to be praised. All of a sudden, the boss knows who you are. Go in person. Take a box of donuts and a thermos full of coffee. Or if it's after lunch, you know, take them to lunch. Take them lunch. Maybe cater their office. It may not be cheap, but you have to use your own judgment to figure out exactly how much effort and time you need to put into it. Put together some sales materials of some sort, whether it's a flyer, at least some business cards. Figure out what you can do for your customer. Do lots of research to figure out what your customer does. Don't go in empty-handed if possible. Know what they ship, know where they ship it. Ask a lot of open-ended questions. Open-ended meaning, can you tell me more about what you do here? Not, where does this box go? Because if you ask, what do you do here? They will tell you about how much they make, where it goes, what they ship it to, all the troubles they have getting it there. But if you just ask, where does this box go? They'll say, we ship that to Montana once a week. Well, that's not what you need to know. You need to know everything they do as much as you can. Get to the decision maker. Ask them how you can help. Tell them how you can solve their problems. Ask them what their problems are. Tell them how you are the answer to their prayers. They have a shipment that they have trouble making it on time. Fix it for them. They have issues with communications with their drivers. Fix it for them. They need somebody to show up there an hour early before the shipment goes out and stay an hour after the truck's unloaded. Fix it for them. Yes, you can work it into your rates. You can do whatever you need to do, but fix it for them. So be the problem, the solution to their problems. Then just knock on a lot of doors. Then knock on a lot of doors again, the same doors. Sales are rarely made on the first encounter. Get your foot in the door. Get them to know who you are. Help them solve their problems. Maybe you somehow help them solve their problems and you're not the one that actually provides the service. Yes, that would work great if you had a lift truck on this. Or maybe if you put a forklift at your other warehouse that would help you do that. Even if you're not the truck that makes that move, all of a sudden they remember you because you solved the problem for them. Next week, go in and do it again. The next week, do it again. Do you have any freight that I can move? No? I'll be back next week to check again. Comment on one of the Facebook groups before about try and try again, and I don't remember who it was, said something along the lines of they made 500 plus sales calls, over 500 calls in person and over the phone, multiple attempts, over 500 attempts, 500 different direct shippers. Two panned out, only two out of 500. That's the type of effort it will take. Don't be discouraged by the word no. Next, I'll say learn all about contracts. If you're dealing with any bigger companies, they will have some contracts of their own in place. Learn what to look out for, what to negotiate on. If you're looking at sealing a long-term dedicated deal, learn something about how to form your own contracts. If it's something serious, hire an attorney to help out. And well, I don't know what's going on with the phones. I see these calls popping up and dropping off again. If you have any call, anything, if you pop up right now, I will jump on the call before we lose it. And I think Elizabeth is screening another call. Let me see if I can diagnose these phones. If I can't get the calls on, Elizabeth is screening the calls, and we'll at least get some of the questions on the air. But yes, get out there and find the freight that works for you. Don't be afraid to say no yourself either. If it's a shipper that, don't just be out there just to get direct shippers, just to beat your own drum to say, I got a direct shipper. If the shipper doesn't work for you, if you can't make the money you need, if you can't get the rates that you need, you can't get the lanes that work for your equipment, politely say no. Maybe you can help them with something else at a later date. Do not lock yourself into a program where you're losing money or you don't have the proper equipment because you're taking a risk of causing damage, having losses. So get out there, knock on the doors, do as much research as possible, and don't be afraid to say no. Don't be afraid to hear no. All right, the calls are coming back. Let me jump to them right away. Brandon in Wyoming. Welcome to the show.
Hey. I'm looking
You're with us. How can we help you?
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you. How can we help you tonight?
Okay, good. I'm looking at doing a short-term contract, power only.
Okay.
Hauling reefers out of one location and going as far as 350 miles, maybe. And
okay.
Then back to original location. And I
now, this will be dedicated?
Yeah, it'll be dedicated.
And then just 5 days a week, 6 days a week? How would you figure that?
5 days a week.
Okay, and then on the weekends, you won't be doing any other work, anything like that?
Right.
Probably not. Yeah, okay. All right. Here's how I quote anything. And it'll apply fairly easily to what you're doing. Figure out what your fixed costs are. Fixed costs. Okay? Meaning your truck payment, your office expenses, your insurance costs, everything. Everything that you write a check for every month, it's about the same amount. Okay? Put that on category one. Next, figure out what your operational costs are. Figure out what your cost for fuel is when you're bobtailing or you're pulling their odds and ends trailers. Figure out what your average fuel cost will be. Figure out what your driver cost will be, including any taxes or workers' compensation, anything like that. And add in whatever your maintenance per mile will be. Now, mind you, in your fixed costs, you will have a maintenance fund or a truck payment, one or the other, or maybe even both. And those will be fixed, you know, daily, recurring, putting money into savings. But for variable operational costs, such as tires, oil changes, things like that, you will have a mileage rate for maintenance. Typically, what I find for a van, now, one of the things that I do, I always try to figure it on if I had a brand new truck, and because you're competing with fleets that have brand new trucks, right? So
right.
Figure it on if you had a brand new truck, and maybe that leaves you a little bit of room for negotiation because your cost might be a little lower. And
right.
Then figure whatever your profit needs to be. You, the company. Now, you drive your own truck?
Yeah.
Okay. So what, and you don't have to give me exact numbers, but I'm just going to say this just to get the idea out. What do you pay yourself?
$200 a day.
$200 a day. Okay, that's a good way to do it. What does your company make?
$100.
$100 a day. Okay, so
yeah.
In your fixed costs, between your truck payment, your insurance, and everything else, typically that number at $100 a day company profit usually comes out between $300 and $350 per day. Okay? And then your operational costs for fuel, now yours will be easy because you just want a flat $200 per day. So you could even throw that into your fixed cost if you wanted to. So $300 to $350 plus your $200 a day, so $550. No matter what, if they have you take one run from point A to point B, it's $550, right? Plus your fuel
okay.
and maintenance costs. for whatever the mileage is. That's easy. Now, if you have more, I see the next caller online. I was waiting for this. So sorry. If you have if you have more how do I say this? More miles than your $200. And what I do is I set a $200 a day minimum if I drive, let's say, 500 miles. But if I do 600 miles a day, I want to make a little bit more money. So I pay myself like 50 cents a mile, plus, you know, which works out to be you know, $250 a day. If I get 500 miles, $300 a day. That's kind of how I like to do it. Figure out what your per day cost for the driver is and your fixed cost for your truck. Maybe one day they have you do two runs, the next day they have you do one. Maybe they want it broken down by runs. But figure out what your average will be for the week and figure out exactly what you need as a minimum for all of those to meet your numbers. Okay? And then, of course, then at that point you adjust for the market. You say, look, well, we know that he will pay more than that or he won't pay that much, so what do we have to do to fix it, you know? But you'll use your best judgment with that.
Okay. Now, they had mentioned, yeah, they had mentioned they want to bid on, you know, 0 to 100 miles, 100 to 200 miles,
okay,
stuff like that.
Now, would those be like one per day runs?
No, those would be probably two or three.
Okay, if you did two or three. So, again, what I would do is I would set a daily rate, a daily minimum rate plus a mileage rate.
Okay.
So your daily rate of, say, $500 for you and your payment plus your mileage rate, and that's going to be your minimum. If you can get more than that, if it, you know, depending on how the customer wants to do it and the supply and demand issues, but that's how I would set your minimum rate. So 500 to 550 a day is the numbers that I typically see, 5 to 550 a day, plus your mileage rate, which right now is probably 30 to 35 cents for fuel, plus about 15 cents a mile for your maintenance. So right around 50 cents per mile for your operational cost, not including driver. So $500 a day plus 50 cents per mile, something like that. And you need to tailor that to your operation, of course. But figure out what your numbers need to be, and don't worry about what everybody else's numbers are. That's one of my pet peeves. Don't worry about what the averages are. Don't worry about anything else until you know your number. Then you can look and see, okay, well, everybody else is making $800 a day. I can charge more. But if you know that if you need, with your numbers, you need $500 a day, but everybody else is only charging $400 a day, maybe you need to find a different opportunity. So come up with your numbers first, then adjust for your customer and your market.
Okay.
Now, what I do to come up with my numbers is I add it all up for the year, and I break it down 11 months out of the year, 21 days a month, so 220 days. Or you can do 5 days a week for 4 weeks a month, so in however many, many months you plan on working.
I actually built a spreadsheet off of one of your last shows, so I got a lot of that already down.
Oh, well, that's pretty intense right there. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that people are listening, and I'm glad that you broke it down like that. And, you know, I get a lot of feedback from both sides with it, so I'm glad you're taking the advice. I will tell you that if you follow that, a lot of brokers do it a very similar way, and I can pretty much nail down what a broker can bid on some of these rates with that formula to within a few bucks usually, and it works very well. And if you can get your operation to where you're happy with the numbers that you make, forget about everybody else's numbers, you'll end up making more money in the long run. I promise you. So that's how I would break down everything. Daily runs, short runs, long runs, because that formula really takes into account any situation.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that helps me out a lot.
All right, well, if you have any
other
questions, you can find me on Facebook in the groups there, or feel free to call back again. I appreciate the call. We have had a lot of problems with the phones tonight, but we have the call that I was waiting for, the one that I knew I would get, Carl in Michigan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening for quite a while now. I love the conversation about negotiating. I used to haul fuel back in the 80s before you needed a CDL, and did a lot of things. Ended up in real estate, commercial real estate for almost 25 years. Retired and, well, full circle, I'm back to driving a truck again. I've been expediting for about 3 years and trying to learn enough about expediting to get my own authority and try to take what I learned in real estate and negotiating contract law and bring it into the trucking. And it's a bit of a challenge, but I really appreciate what you were saying about the per mileage rate and the fuel surcharge. You know, give me what I need for, you know, my flat rate, and I'm willing to give you a discount on the fuel surcharge. And basically, you know, pay me what I need for my apples, and I'll discount my oranges. Now, what I'm trying to figure out is, now, because you've, you know, done these upgrades to your truck, which I have, I'm driving a straight truck now, expediting, and by changing from a 411 to a 390 gear and a few other advancements, listening and making modifications, I'm up to almost 12 miles to the gallon on the average, between 11.5 and 12 miles to the gallon, which is great. But do I want to disclose, in your opinion, the advantage that I have? Because I have invested so much more money into my trucks, I'm able to give you a discount on the fuel surcharge, or what do you think it would be to my advantage to just, you know, offer it as I'm willing to take a loss on the fuel surcharge in order to service you as my client, in order to get your business?
Well, it's interesting how you phrase that. You said take a loss on your fuel surcharge. Can you expand on that a little bit? How do you see yourself taking a loss on the fuel surcharge?
Well, if I don't disclose that I'm getting 12 miles to the gallon, their presumption will be that I'm taking a small loss, or I'm taking the shortage on the fuel surcharge. Rather than, because realistically, I'm making the same money as the other guy. He just doesn't get as good a mileage as I do.
Right. Right.
But
okay.
Now, I wouldn't necessarily want to disclose that. What do you think, that'd be an advantage to disclose that to a potential client, and that if you do business with me, I'm able to, you know, service you at a lower fuel surcharge because I've modified my trucks, which you can actually use to your advantage.
Okay. And now that line of thinking is exactly what I thought I would get. And that line of thinking comes from the thought of, if you're leased to a carrier, you're making money on the fuel surcharge. If you turn it around and you're not making as much money, or if you change your fuel surcharge to reflect the miles per gallon that you're actually getting, then you're not making money on that. But right now, the new truck's off the line. And I know there's some lemons, and I know there's, you know, the anomalies out there, but there are trucks off the line, the Cascadia Evolutions right now, that are, you know, 9 miles of the gallon trucks out of the box, some bumping 10 miles of the gallon out of the box. They haven't done any special modifications. They haven't done any, you know, anything other than, you know, they bought a new truck. So the company that goes out and buys a whole bunch of Freightliner Cascadia Evolutions, it has a yard right next to a company that goes out and buys a bunch of Peterbilt 389s. Right? When they go to negotiate for the exact same customer, let's say they both pull dry vans, same operation, and they go and they're negotiating for the exact same lane, and the guy in the 389 says, I need $1,000 for this lane plus my fuel surcharge at 6 miles to the gallon, and he knows at the end of the day, you know, all of his trucks get 6 miles to the gallon. At the end of the day, he gets 1,000 miles for every one of those runs he pulls. The next guy comes over, and he says, well, guess what? I can do it for $1,000 plus fuel surcharge, but I'll base mine at 9 miles to the gallon. That's, if you do the math, that works out to be about half the cost in fuel. So the savings goes on to the shipper. But here's the thing. The trucks both cost about the same. You know, a new truck financed, you know, with a trailer, you're looking at about $3,000 give or take $100 or $200, because one's a, you know, a premium PACCAR product versus a Freightliner. I get the difference, but the point is both trucks are roughly the same price, same payment, same operational cost, except for fuel. Everything else is the same except for the fuel cost. One is happy making $1,000, and the other is happy making $1,000. Which one will get the contract?
The one that can offer a lower fuel surcharge.
Meaning which one, the Freightliner or the Peterbilt?
The Freightliner. The Freightliner, if he plays it correctly.
Right.
Or he can, charge the same fuel, same fuel charge and just be a, you know, another rat in the pack.
Exactly, but why would they give him that when they could give it to the other guy? Then it comes down to other issues. That's just one more selling point. So
well,
now
I mean,
the guy that's got the...
Go ahead.
I was saying, now the guy that has the fleet of Freightliner Evolutions has 100 trucks out there running, making money, happy, and the guy with the 389s in the yard next door has a yard full of 389s that are sitting with no work because the fuel mileage was a selling point for the other one. And I'm using this as a kind of an extreme example just to make my point, but that's how you can win by passing that savings on.
No, I get that. I mean, but in mm-hmm. regards to the psychology of the sale, do you think it would be better to approach them in that, you know, I'm willing to, you know, in order to secure your contract, I'm willing to drive, and I lease right now to a large carrier, so I'm not involved mm-hmm. with that, but I would like to get my own authority and step out of that and take advantage of my real estate background and negotiating and building relationships and negotiating contracts. That's really my forte. I love driving, but I'm really, I'm on the other side of the deal, and I'm getting a little old to be climbing up and down out of the truck forever. Eventually, I'm going to want to step into the business end of it and maybe have, you know, maybe a half a dozen trucks. Not an
right.
army, but, you know, maybe a SWAT team of of trucks that, you know, that I can take care of and I can treat them the way you have to in order to keep them. And I'll own these guys. I'll own their loyalty because I'll earn it. But I'm saying when you go to the customer, do you think it'd be more to your advantage to play it as, you know, I'm willing to do the same thing for less, or I'm different because I've invested the money. I can do this job for less. I can discount my price without having to discount my service because I've invested more into the infrastructure of my transportation. I mean, which way should you play that? Some guys got to feel like they're beating you up a little bit and take advantage of you to get to the business. And then the other side of the game, there's the guys that want to do business with somebody who's just a little better than the next guy because he's got a little nicer truck. His drivers are a little more polite. You can't tell what they've been having for lunch all week because they're not wearing the same shirt.
Absolutely. Now, I think there's something to be said for both angles on that. And that kind of comes down to the salesmanship and being able to use your best judgment and read your customer and figure out what they'd be most interested in. A lot of people right now, if you were trying to sell and get yourself into a customer out of California, they want to know about fuel savings and green and all that stuff. Now, if you're trying to sell yourself to New York City, they want to see the money you spent to be green, the money you spent to do what you can do. So I think it kind of comes down to the customer and who you're trying to sell yourself to. But both sides of that are sales points that you can use to your advantage, which ultimately you can take that rate and work your baseline rate around your fuel surcharge instead of the other way, where a lot of people come out here and they're so focused on their base rate and adding that fuel surcharge to it. But if they can actually massage those numbers, it's what it's called one of the negotiation tactics in that book I mentioned, the 21 Rules of Negotiation. It's called using funny money.
Great book.
Okay. It's called funny money. How much does it usually cost you to buy a car? When you see it in an advertisement, what is it, a new Volvo car cost you or a new Toyota cost you? It doesn't usually cost you $40,000 in the newspaper. It's $299 a month.
$99 down and $199 a month.
Because it's a psychological trick. At the end of the day, it's the exact same price. But when you say $40,000, people turn the page. But when you see, you know, $299 a month, oh, I can afford that. If you see...
Actually, you can make it a more expensive one sound cheaper by manipulating the advertising on the financing options until you read the small print.
Same thing happens if you were in real estate. They do it in real estate. They do it huge. I mean, nobody ever quotes insurance rates on an annual premium. They tell you what the monthly cost will be. Even Obamacare. That's how they sold Obamacare to us. They said, this is what your monthly cost will be. Nobody looks at annual premiums. It's called funny money. It's the same amount, but it's a psychological trick to make us think that we can afford it. You can use the same technique and massage your baseline number by using your fuel surcharge number to make it sound better, although it's the exact same number at the end, if you do the math. But it sounds better to say, I can do it for $200 less for the fuel surcharge.
If you're using the real numbers, I actually use that. Funny you should mention that. When I'm showing a customer their perception of value, I built houses, I bought houses, I renovated homes, so I had a very good perception of value. But when somebody's out there, especially a first-time buyer or even a second-time buyer, they don't know the difference between a $150,000 house and a $120,000 house. But they can see a house, and I'll, you know, I can show that to them, and I can say, well, what do you think about this house? And they'll tell me what they think. And I'll say, well, this one's $1,200 a month. And then they know what that is. They know I can get what I'm seeing here is going to cost me $1,200 a month without having to go into the financing, the down payment, and the private mortgage insurance and the utilities and all the rest of that. I've already worked out what the numbers are based on the average cost and so forth. And I can show them another house, and I say, this one here, this one's only $1,000 a month. And if they see that the one for $1,000 a month is a much greater value, it's easier for them to make the decision. So basically what you're telling me is I can use the same game plan when approaching a shipper, just giving something and that they can relate to in very simple, basic, non-math terms, you know, for this I can give you that. Or, you know, for this much, the other guy can give you that.
You nailed it. That's the way to do it. And it's actually works out to be the exact same final answer, no matter how you slice it, but it sounds better. It sounds easier to stomach. It sounds affordable. It sounds like a better deal. It's the exact same. And if you work the numbers, you'll know it's the exact same. But if two guys walk into a room, they give you their sales pitch real quick. One guy says he can do it for $1,800 plus fuel surcharge. The other guy says $2,000 plus fuel surcharge. $1,800 wins every time. Everything else equal, $1,800 wins every time. Then you figure out what your fuel surcharge is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is how I actually know somebody that sealed the deal and landed another annual contract doing just that, and it worked out. And I thought it was a phenomenal sales technique. And what they did was, and like I said, they actually made the price. I don't know what they set their price at, but, you know, like I said, they set their price higher than the average. So that they said such and such amount plus fuel surcharge, which actually means they're giving money back to the shipper, a discount. So every week or every month when the shipper signs their check, they actually feel good about it, not just at the point of sale, but also every month thereafter they're subtracting their fuel discount and saying, this would have been $5,000, but I get a $1,000 discount because they're giving me a fuel surcharge discount. So I'm going to be $4,000, and they feel good about it for the rest of the year. So next year, even, they get the same contract again. So it's the gift that keeps on giving with this one. I loved the concept. I loved it when they were explaining it to me, and that's what it comes down to. It's funny money.
No, it's great. It's a real power move. But the other thing that I've really been taking notes for 3 years. I've worked for three different carriers, including a private carrier, and I'm really taking note at the shippers and the receivers and the different carriers. And even the brokers that are behind it, some of them call me directly, and I say, well, I'd love to, but you're going to have to call my carrier. I'm leased to my carrier. And I've actually done loads in reverse. But the one thing that I've noticed is that, I mean, I've agreed to carry it, and I say, okay, you call my carrier, and I'll call them and let them know you're calling, and they'll set it up. I agreed to carry the load before they actually ran it past my broker. But one thing that I've noticed that I'm really amazed it's missing is nobody's working at building relationship with these shippers. They're not, you know, stopping in several times a year with coffee mugs and, you know, tickets to the ball game and just little thank yous, you know, pizzas, box of donuts, nothing, not even a free baseball cap. Occasionally I'll see
it's
a few
unreal.
Magnetic. I can't understand why they're missing the bus on the relationship.
And not just shippers, but brokers too. Brokers can be great relationships to have, and to really, you know, push those relationships is another good attribute to have with your business. You know, if you have a lot of brokers that really turn to you because you're the problem solver for them, and, you know, they we have one broker that calls us all the time because our drivers have met with him. We, you know, tried to meet, didn't work out, but we actually attempted to meet with him when he was on vacation in Florida. He invited us, and it just, we passed each other on the street, but it was, when you build relationships, they remember you, and they keep coming back and calling you. It's just how life works. People like to work with people they like. And
absolutely.
Brokers, direct shippers, the same. And it's the relationships is something that I've just been pounding on since I started this show, and I'm glad you brought it up. It's a lost art, and sometimes all it takes is a phone call to say hello. Honestly, check in with it. If you have a broker that you like and you work with on a regular basis, don't go for months without calling them and then call them one day and say, hey, what loads do you have out of this area? Call them from time to time, see how they're doing. Little small talk, never hurt anybody. Ask them how they, you know, what kind of freight they've got out of, you know, what's new, what's happening. Maybe you can't help them today, but I just want to stay in touch and be ready to help you when you do have something for us. You know, and sometimes it's all it takes. Communication is key in this business.
All of the research that I've done and all the books that I've ever read, it's all about contact, not context. And so, you know, they don't want to do business with a stranger, so they may have to see you and interact with you a dozen times before they're going to feel comfortable enough to risk their business with you. So if it was somebody, you know, thinking about selling a house up for sale by owner, you might have to approach them 10, 12 times before they feel comfortable enough and offer them something without asking anything in return. If you're only approaching them 3 or 4 times, then giving up, thinking they're not interested, you're pretty much leaving, you know, 90% of the money on the table for somebody else. The biggest way that I've found in order to build a relationship with a broker, a carrier, or even a dispatcher, because they're desperate to get somebody to carry the garbage load, you know, or as I call it, eating the crap sandwich, if you're
yep.
willing to do that and tell them, say, you know what, normally I'd say no to this, but I really like you. I feel we connect. I know that if I do this for you, that somewhere along the line, you're going to make it up to me. Am I feeling something that's not there? And they'll say, oh, no, you cover this for me, and I'll make it up to you. Absolutely, Carl. And I do that for them, and it's like an instant, you're inside now. You're not on the outside looking in anymore.
Absolutely. That's what I was saying earlier. We were talking about going in and trying to make a sale for a direct shipper, soliciting, be the problem solver. Find out what it is, because that's the easiest way to build that relationship. Solve a problem for them. Be the and like I said, you don't even have to be the guy that hauls the load that they can't move, but be the guy that helps figure it out for them. We do that all the time. We do a lot lately of pad wrap, logistic type loads, and we get calls for lift gates. Well, I have ramps, I don't have lift gates. But we always tell them, you know, you can rent forklifts. You could hire other, you know, liftgate trucks to help you out. Maybe liftgate on one end, or, you know, tow trucks, the rollback wrecker type. And we give them all these options, even though we are not going to be the one that hauls the load, we tell them what they could do to make it work. Next time they have that, they'll call us.
Yeah, next time they have a problem, they'll think of you.
Absolutely.
Listen, I really appreciate the information. I'm not ready to make the commitment to step into all the headaches and the legalism that's involved in being the carrier, but I am looking forward to it. I'm definitely going to keep listening. Thank you so much for what you do. Keep it up.
And thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I appreciate everybody that chimed in tonight. We did have some phone issues. There were a lot of calls on, and it looked like I would click on the button and they would drop off. And I don't know what the deal is. Maybe it's something with my switchboard here. But thank you all for sticking it out with me tonight. If you're listening to this show on the recording, you can catch us every Tuesday at 7 p.m. We're into the fourth quarter, so I do get busy in the fourth quarter. I will try to be here every Tuesday, and if I can't make it, I will make it up to you the following week. Tomorrow, Wednesday, 7 p.m., you can catch Rico Muhammad with Rates and Lanes. His number, if it comes up here, his number, Wednesday at 7 p.m., 347-677-1799. Kim Carterham with Destination Health, Wednesday is now at 245, 347-884-8327. Sunday nights with Rolling Toe, Mike and Kevin Beckett at 347-637-1067. I'm Kenny Long. This is Trucking with Authority. Thanks for hanging out with me for the hour, and we will do it again next week. Have a good night, everybody.